media opportunity today at 12:30. But it's a gorgeous May afternoon. Hope everybody's doing well. Auburn didn't do so well last night up in Jacksonville. Jason Caldwell in with us here as usual on Wednesdays. Let's turn that one on.
I started thinking about it, and you think about the schedule that they've had, and I thought it looked like a team that was a little bit tired last night, to be quite honest. And look, that's just part of it, I think, sometimes. But you look at the quick turnaround, they've had back-to-back road trips, and you make a Tuesday night trip. So I thought they looked a little worn down, to be quite honest. And listen, the other part of that is Jacksonville State's pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
And so, you run into a team that pitched it pretty well. And look, you had the same amount of hits. But I thought, too, listen, I'm not in any excuse-making business, but you're pitching on turf, and a turf mound is very different.
Oh, the mound?
The mound is
turf. Oh, okay, that is different.
And so you have a leadoff walk that comes around to score in the first inning, mm-hmm. and another leadoff walk, a couple of hit batters, and I thought, look, there weren't a ton of control issues, but there were a couple of moments, and then in those moments they were able to capitalize, and Auburn couldn't get the hit when they had some guys on base. And I thought it was just one of those nights. So listen, you have those in baseball.
Man, and the thing is, again, it's you don't want to have any excuses or anything like that. But you're coming off another big road series win,
yeah.
And you've got the number one team in the country coming in starting tomorrow.
Yeah, no, it's you start looking at it going, listen, would you love to beat Jacksonville State? Absolutely. Is the most important games this week coming up? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If you're Auburn. You have wrapped up a regional host. No matter what, you're going to be hosting a regional.
Yeah, first round.
How about this? I wonder if we'll see. And again, not to make any excuses for like you'd have liked Auburn to have played better last night. Sure, but like I could see SEC teams maybe even moving away from midweek games this late in the season if they're such an afterthought or if they're such a we've seen a couple of I know what we're already seeing around
I don't think it was an afterthought for Auburn. I just thought
I don't want to take anything away from Jacksonville State.
I thought
a little tired.
Yep.
But they chose to not play a midweek game during finals.
Hmm.
So that's what Butch Thompson is. So look, we're not going to play a midweek game during finals. So you might have switched those weeks, but he didn't want to do that. And so
you're going to end up – I mean, you can play 56
Yeah, they're going to be a little bit short anyway.
They're only going to play 54.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I would just hate to brush aside like two really impressive road series wins in the last two weekends in SEC play.
For one non-conference
because,
game.
Because you didn't score more runs against Jacksonville State
That's it. And I think, look, Butch Thompson's hinted that a little bit today, going, listen – You cannot throw away what's been done this season already because you lost to a pretty good Jacksonville State team on the road. And you lost to them twice.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I tried to explain to folks, it's not that Auburn doesn't care about that game, but if you say which one of those teams going into that game has
– more?
Yeah, there's no question about it because that's the game where Jacksonville State has to have. Look, they're not going to host a regional. But they may be a really strong two seed now.
I think they will be a pretty strong two seed.
And that's the thing. I think they're going to be a team with what they're done, especially if they go on and were to win their conference tournament. They're going to be an at-large bid no matter what. If they were to win their conference tournament, I could see them being a two seed opposite the 12 overall seed, where normally they would be opposite a national seed. I don't think that's going to be the case with this Jacksonville State team. So. But now look for Auburn. They've done it all year. You look and go, man, they haven't been a team that's rattled off 10 or 12 in a row. And I listened to somebody today talking about that. And they said, look, the Detroit Pistons, they're talking about them in the NBA. Said, look, they're probably going to go 6 or 7 games, but they may win it. They may not win the overall thing, but listen, they're not a team that's probably going to rattle off 8 or 9 wins in a row like the Thunder. That kind of reminds me of this Auburn baseball team. Look, it is their marathon. It's not a sprint. Will they sweep a ton of folks? Maybe not. But were they going to give themselves a chance to win series? And yes, and that's what you're looking for. And, look, they'll have that chance again this weekend against a really good Georgia team and a team that can really swing the bat. Looks like Auburn's played some good offensive teams this season. They haven't played anybody as good as Georgia because there's not anybody as good as Georgia.
Offensively, no question about it. Yeah, I mean, they're at or near the top of just about every offensive category there is in the country.
Yeah, no, they can. You know, Dan Jackson is a triple crown, more than likely a triple crown winner. Mm-hmm. When you look at what he's doing, a guy that is a catcher and has 24 stolen bases, that's pretty good. So, hitting for power, can run. They got. I think they got six players with at least 13 home runs.
It's a weird series though because it feels like Georgia's won the SEC regular season title
going away.
They can't. I don't think they're going to share it with anybody. Right?
Oh no, no, no!
It's
no.
Already over.
They have a five-game lead with three games to play.
Five up with three to play. There's do the math on that. Auburn feels pretty secure for a top eight. I guess you could debate whether or not Georgia.
No, there's no debate for Georgia. I don't care what the RPI is. If you win this league, you win this league and you've won 21 SEC games. Now, if Auburn were to sweep them, maybe there's a chance they might not be, but I find it hard to believe that a 22-8 team in this league is not a national seed.
Especially with four or five SEC teams potentially in the top eight.
Their RPI is going to be top 10.
Sure.
Because they're 11 now, and they're coming to Auburn,
right,
who's the number two RPI team in the country. The RPI is going to finish in the top 10.
I mean, beyond the fact that it's Auburn, Georgia, and it's SEC conference baseball, and it's senior day weekend, stuff like that.
All kinds of things.
Josh
weekend.
Donaldson weekend,
Rod Bramblett press box weekend.
Rod Bramblett, which is an awesome mm-hmm. touch and deservedly so. But it is strange that it's like it feels like the postseason outlook doesn't change too much for either team, no matter what outcome you pick this weekend. Well, that's sort of like
I think Georgia is playing for overall seeding.
Sure.
Because mm-hmm.
the more games they win, the more they bump up the national seed line. And you, in theory, theoretically, make your path easier.
And these are two teams that you feel like should be top eight teams when we get the bracket.
I still think that it would be beneficial for Auburn to win a game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
A lot of people think they're in now.
Five game losing streak would make it easier.
Yeah, I mean,
for
16-14 in this league.
Yeah.
Because it'd be different if there were three RPI top five teams. Like everybody, you're gonna have seven top 10 RPI teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think 17-13, 100% without question, you're a top eight national seed.
With the schedule.
But for Georgia, you're playing for seeding purposes. I think. So there's still some things to play for. Listen, the SEC tournament, it'd be nice. Hey, if you didn't have to play the first 2 days and you're top four national, that'd be great. In the grand scheme of things, Butch Thompson wants. I'm not speaking for Butch Thompson. I'm speaking for me. In the grand scheme of things, it means nothing. It does. It means zero. Just like right now, the SEC basketball tournament means nothing. And I think again we're careening towards that in SEC football too, because just think about the last few years. I don't even remember who won the SEC championship.
Well, that's why, despite what Greg Sankey can say whatever he wants, the SEC doesn't need a championship
because
game
it
anymore.
Does not matter any
no,
longer.
You're
it,
right.
It used to matter.
I mean, all it could do is maybe hurt a team that loses
or get somebody hurt.
Yes, that's right.
That's it. And I think, but at baseball, the same thing.
I mean,
like,
if you remember who won the SEC championship, why play them?
No. So this is right now. Everything is about, for me, seeding purposes and getting yourself positioned for the NCAA tournament. Single elimination now SEC tournament baseball allows you to be able to maybe make a run if everything goes right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't need as much pitching as you used to.
No, but it's still one of those things where you go, man, what's more beneficial to you if you're hosting and going to be a national seed? Is it more beneficial to run through Sunday in Hoover? Some teams have done well doing that.
Yeah.
Others have not. You just don't know. But, listen – Dre Alvarez and Jake Marciano and Alec Petrovic have already pitched more than any of those guys, any innings than they've ever pitched in their career before.
And I was thinking about that the other night, and as we listen to Butch today, yes, I hope Jake is great tomorrow night, but These guys have never pitched as many innings as they have right now.
No.
So, I mean, you worry about them sort of hitting the wall.
Yes. No, I mean, that's the thing. And I think, I do think that last week was a challenge, and you saw it. It was a difficult one. Now
it's not just one. Yeah, it wasn't just one less day.
It was two less days for Jake. Yeah. So you're back to full rest for him. You go, okay, now you get a chance to have a full rest. He did not throw a ton of pitches. Now Dre did. Not as many. And so, you're back on full rest now. Georgia is one less day because they were Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
They're one less day for them, and they're an interesting dynamic on the mound because it's really right-hand heavy and really breaking ball heavy. And they have guys that almost all of them feel like they pitch like relievers. They throw a ton of breaking balls. I mean, it's a different staff. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Auburn matches up at the plate for them. But you feel like, listen, they've had one of those games really each weekend. But if you feel like you're Auburn and if you have a three-run game against Georgia, your chance of winning that game is probably not very good. You're going to have to score some runs.
Oh, yes, yes.
As good as Auburn's pitching has been, you don't figure you're going to go into this and hold them to two or three runs in a couple of games.
Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with us here in the studio in hour number one here on the Wednesday Drive.
Yeah, great stuff about the last baseball season, the last baseball series of the season. You guys mentioned a ton going on this weekend related to this baseball series as well.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Donaldson's jersey will be added to the wall. Well, his number. I mean,
yes.
Not literally.
Yeah, Jake Marciano's number.
The likeness, yes, will be added there to the wall.
Jake's allowed to keep his number, right?
He's good. I heard him talking about it a little bit today and said I think they had talked and, like, he's going to be able to hold on to that for a while. So that's good news. But, yeah, I mean, listen, Josh, a guy that covered him from the time he was a freshman coming in, talked to him for a little while today and heading into the weekend about kind of what this means to him. And so obviously a huge honor. And it's really interesting because, a guy that he played baseball with a real bravado, but he doesn't talk about himself a whole lot. Like, he's not one of those guys that toots his own horn. He is not Ricky Henderson when he's giving interviews. But, looking forward to kind of seeing him and getting that recognition that he just so deserves. And then, Bill mentioned it, Butch mentioned today, the name in the booth after Rod, which is absolutely the right thing to do. And, listen, all of us knew Rod, and Butch was talking about, kind of the connections and the memories about, that. And, it was pretty neat to see and to hear. And so, well-deserved a couple of honors this weekend.
Yeah, Andy just mentioned in his appearance last week. What was the game, Andy? Andy missed UAB? And
yes.
It was because he was attending
Joshua.
Yeah, he was attending Joshua's graduation at Georgia State, which is really cool news.
So tickets are tough to find. So
hot ticket this weekend.
Yeah, no kidding.
Tell you what, I saw a lot of.
I was going to just say I just got notification that regional and super regional ticket availables have just gone out.
Okay.
So Auburn making preparations for the possibility that they're going to host in both regional and super regional play.
Yeah, and you never know. Even if you're a national top eight seed, you've got to win the regional. But
win.
I mean, you still have. This would give folks, the season ticket holders, the option to go ahead and be first in line and go ahead and claim their seats.
And it was so cool last season, the regional play and the super regionals, even though the Coastal Carolina series didn't go as planned. It's still just electric atmosphere, and hopefully Auburn can get some more postseason action in at Plainsman Park in both regional and super regional play.
Absolutely.
This is a team that, and I mean, I suppose maybe Butch had – maybe the team that went to the College World Series, you could say this about, the first one. But, like, if the thought that between the three weekend starters and Jackson, if they want to go that way with Jackson, like, you've got four guys that can start for you that you feel like give you a puncher's chance or better every single time they're out there. Not a ton of teams have that, right? Like, I mean, once you get into that third game, that, like, you're talking about how dangerous Auburn's offense has been on Sundays in game threes.
Yeah.
It's because a lot of teams are TBA on Sunday.
Even really good teams in the SEC
correct.
Sometimes can't go even to their third and feel really good about it, let alone a fourth guy.
No, this is a team that, listen, if you get consistent offensive play, you feel like this is a team that has a chance to go win it all. But you, like, you can't have, and I wrote about it today, look, they've lost 16 games. In 12 of those 16, they've scored three runs or less. Like, so, listen.
It's when the offense falters.
And that's it. And listen, some of that is due to the other side. Like, you face some really good pitchers in this league. But we were talking about it. It's the marathon, not the sprint. Because you feel like over a three-game scenario, you feel like this team has an advantage because of the depth of your pitching staff. Even with, listen, we were talking about today. I mean, you forget about Drew Whalen.
Mm-hmm.
You forget about, like, you had – that would have been your other Jackson Sanders.
Right.
That was your
fifth starter. Right-handed Jackson Sanders.
That was your fifth starter. Yeah. You had five guys. Look, L.J. Cormier has kind of slid into that role now, and he's doing a good job. We've seen Marcel Kulik come on a little bit. We've seen Abe Chancellor come on a little bit. And then you got Ryan Hetzler at the back end. You go, man, like, you feel like seven, eight guys on the pitching staff for the weekend, and now, look, you're through midweeks. Now Griffin Graves is a guy that you can start to get ready for maybe a two- or three-inning role.
What I was about to ask, how could you – what's the plan to deploy Griffin Graves in these situations? Do you think he's ready to step in if a starter stumbles?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Or he could even give you a couple of bridge innings.
I think now it feels like if you have to play before Thursday in Hoover it feels like you do what you did last night.
Sure.
You keep everything the same. You go Griffin Graves in a starting role in Hoover, have some arms to use, and if you get a chance to win it, you could use Ryan Hetzler.
Mm-hmm.
And then you keep your – you don't – we've seen in the past, you're going to throw a guy on short rest. I don't feel like you would do that now because you're like, okay, we're going to keep everything the same. We're going to use our midweek approach, and if that's good enough, then we put ourselves in a position to win. So it feels like at least before – once you get a regional play, it's bullpen to me.
Yeah, regional you is when you could actually need more pitchers, especially if you lose. If you lose there early on, then you may. But, no, Auburn doesn't have that obvious weakness. That's the thing that a lot of teams have to adjust for, is even if you've had somebody who's been your Saturday starter all year – You may not have as much confidence in them as you do one or two of your other guys.
We just saw, like, Texas A&M, really their only consistent starter this season. They're holding this weekend for some tightness, and that's been the one guy that's been good for them. So now they go into a series against Mississippi State feeling like that they don't have any of their guys that they know what they're going to get when they walk on a mound. That's a scary
feeling heading into the last weekend. All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. We'll open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar as we're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell here in the studio. And we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise here on this Wednesday.
Talked a lot of baseball in that that first segment with Jason. Didn't really – I mean, we sort of talked about the lineup in broad strokes. But, I mean, there are a couple of players. I feel like it starts with Ethan Bingaman. I mean, there are other players having outstanding seasons.
Yeah, well I wasn't excited to hear Butch say that Ethan's one of the guys that is battling a little bit of an injury now heading into Georgia.
Fouled a ball off his foot last night, and so a little sore. I would expect him and Chase to both be good to go tomorrow. But, you know, like I said, it's been a – you know, when you face – I did it today. This is four straight top 10 series and five out of six.
Wow.
And – out of those,
that's why, as Butch said, it's like a super regional every weekend.
And listen, they Florida was on the road, Texas A&M's on the road, Mississippi State on the road. So three of the last five you've had have been on the road. And so when that happens, you start going, man, you just kind of get beat up. And that happens even in baseball. Yeah. People don't think about it, but your body, takes a toll. And especially a guy like Chase Frelick, you're talking about catching three games a weekend, doing what he does behind the plate. And so, but yeah, no, look, you're right about, you know, Bingman has been, he's been tough. You know, had another hit last night, and he just battles at the plate, and he doesn't get overwhelmed. But, you know, it didn't show up last night. Mason McCrane, the first ball he hit to lead off the game last night was directly at the center fielder, and I don't know what the number said, but it had to be at least 110 miles an hour off the bat. I mean, it was hit that hard. So he's a guy. You know, Brandon McCrane is a redshirt freshman. You think about this team, and you go, man, Chris Rembert and Chase Fralick and Bub Terrell, all those guys are sophomores. And then you go, the McCrane brothers are freshmen. Ethan Bingham is a freshman. So you're seven deep already, and you got freshmen and sophomores. And Eric Gavar is a guy, this is his first year where he's been healthy. So this is still a fairly young baseball team when you speak about them. And so even the pitching staff. So that Butch said today, look, he said, sometimes it might be a negative, but sometimes it can be a positive too, because they just don't know any better, and they're just going out and playing, and that's kind of been the thing for them.
And it's a sweet spot to talk about the baseball team right now, because you have the postseason just around the corner, and there's also not a ton headline-wise coming from football or men's basketball right now, although you get the feeling, and I would sort of kick it to you on this one, like men's basketball is not done building the roster, right? It doesn't seem like this
is.
I mean, maybe they are. I know. I know that they like that. You could. We've said before, if Auburn had a game on Saturday, they could probably find 40 minutes at the three if everyone's healthy, between Overton sliding over and Thomas Dowd sliding down and Adam Olson playing however many minutes he's going to play. Like they could probably do it. They're risking it with that, because I think if someone gets hurt, suddenly you're really stretched pretty thin there. And we've heard them linked to different swingmen. What's your sense, Jason, of what could be next for men's basketball?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you think.
It was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? Weeks ago, Steven said they'd like to have it done in 2 weeks.
Yeah, the question you have is.
And Montez's birthday was last week.
Yes.
Yeah, the question you have is what's the guidance they feel like they're getting about the 5-for-5, the age limit, all those things. Because then you go, look, you got to figure out if it's just 1 year, is it worth it? And if it's 1 year, then, okay, how much does that change maybe what you're paying? Does it change what he's looking to do? Like, there's a lot that goes into this.
I wonder now. I thought about this the other day, I guess over the weekend. I wonder if they now, as we said, there shouldn't be a huge rush with the caveat that does what you do with this player, having him signed or in school, affect anything? But I wondered if maybe now you wait and see if the vote passes and you know exactly what it's going to be before you go ahead and fill that last spot. Because, I mean, the vote's coming up next week. I believe next Friday is when it comes up for a vote, the 5-for-5 with that age stipulation in there. And if that passes, then maybe you can get absolute clarification as to here's what it's going to be.
Correct.
We had a really interesting question earlier this week from somebody, and I don't even pretend to be versed enough in the law to offer like the question, but it's an interesting one of like, will the 5-for-5, and especially will the age 24 rule stand up to any number of lawsuits about age discrimination, which is an interesting question about like, I mean, and I think an unproven, untested sort of thing for the NCAA, because folks will point to like high school sports having age limits, but I think that's sort of a adults versus children argument that maybe doesn't. I mean, like, I don't think
the same argument, right, but it's just in reverse,
right?
Should you have 35-year-old guys playing college sports?
Is it safe? Yeah,
it should be the same
for
thing
for them, right?
Here's the thing: if somebody challenged it,
yeah,
and it's going to happen, somebody's going to challenge it eventually. And go, hey, I'm ready to play in the NFL at 19, even though they're not. Somebody's going to challenge it.
Well, there may be somebody that is, but that doesn't mean all 19-year-olds are.
And an age minimum is
somebody maybe. Yeah. But does that mean you should do it? Are you better off going at 19?
Because an exception.
Yeah, no, that's my thing. Yeah. It's like, but even that guy's like that guy's. He might be able to play at 19.
Right.
But he's not as good as he's going to be at 21. And it's the same thing.
It does seem like professional sports leagues have been able to set age minimums without too much challenge from the outside.
I would think
an age maximum though would be a tough thing, and that's what the NCAA is trying to do by saying, you know, once you're 24, you're out. That is something I don't know. I think if it stands up to legal challenge, then I think the NCAA is in pretty good shape. Where it's like, yeah, we can set a five years with it.
If you've never done anything, mm-hmm. somebody's going to the military.
Right. Well, now that's an exception that they already have.
That's my thing. Military and religious. Yeah, that's my thing. But if somebody has played
and pregnancy for female athletes,
if somebody has played overseas for 7 years in some league.
Oh, Jason, we talked about guys that used to be baseball players wanting to play football. Chris Winkie wouldn't have been able.
I forgot that Monty Harrison, the former outfielder, was on Arkansas last year.
Yeah,
like he played a little bit as a receiver. Yeah,
yeah. 28. I'm all for it. Like, listen, we got to start having some rules.
Right.
I love 5 for 5. I am interested in the age limit. I'm interested in the age maximum holding up to legal challenge. That's the one thing. I think 5 for 5 is something that makes sense.
It would appear there would be some exceptions.
This is your thing. Whichever comes first. Yeah. You turn 24 before the year starts, or you've played 5 years. One of those two things, and then that's it.
I saw one commenter, you know, acknowledging that one potential legal challenge to the age maximum would be someone who was held back for legitimate academic reasons earlier in their life. But suddenly they have a different clock to play college sports because they didn't graduate high school until they were 19 or 20, which is if it's for academic reasons.
I'm wondering how they're going to be able to complete any college work if you couldn't finish high school until you were 20.
But if it was if you were held back, suppose,
of course. What is that? How much have we been concerned about that for the last few years?
Right. Well, we've seen people hold back students for a year, usually not for academic reasons. Too.
Sometimes a lot of times they don't feel like the child is mature as they would expect for a year is what you hear.
Or they want their child to be more mature for sports reasons.
That's it. Right. It sounds like the first one, but it's the second.
That's what they say.
Yes.
I won't name any names. I had a buddy in high school whose parents decided, I mean, there was some academic, there was some academic reasoning in here too, but they thought maybe if he repeated 10th grade at a private school, as a senior, he would be a more attractive soccer prospect to different colleges because he'd be a year older than the guys he was playing against when he was a senior. Like it was, and you know, it's these. I'm sure this wasn't an idea they invented, right?
But you think about it, I think the AHSAA mm-hmm. in this state, I don't think you can turn 19 after or before August 1st
and be eligible to play. Right.
So it's there in high school.
I'll say this, pivoting from the mystery around whether or not they can actually enforce an age maximum, if the 5 for 5 happens, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, there are several very interesting Auburn football players, on top of the basketball players, there are several interesting Auburn football players that we think are seniors right now.
Right, they would have another year.
That would be given an extra year in the 5 for 5, including I believe, Jeremiah Cobb.
Yes.
Is a fourth-year senior for Auburn right now. And the thought that a guy who should have rushed for 1,000 yards last year, a guy that I don't know if we've talked about this, a guy that I suspect could have a massive 2026 season individually. I was thinking about Ben Tate, and I know they're different style running backs, but the fact that Ben Tate was still able to produce in 2008 when everything was working against the Auburn offense and you didn't have a quarterback you could really lean on to produce, and it was an easy offense to defend. And Ben Tate still averaged 4.5 a carry and was a pretty impressive junior. And then you fix some things around the offense, Ben Tate sticks around, and he's the second best SEC, you know, the second best running back in the SEC behind Ingram, who wins the Heisman, rushes for 1,400 yards as a senior for Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, don't get me started on Mark Ingram winning the Heisman, by the way.
Sure, but
that's the biggest travesty in history.
But the thought that Ben Tate was able to, like, the things around Ben Tate were able to conditions became more favorable and he had a massive senior season. The thought that Jeremiah Cobb could do that, and it might not be his senior season, depending on what rules get enforced in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, I know we've probably got to get to a break here in a second, but I thought about it. Like, this is going to be a really interesting. I don't know what to expect. People keep asking.
I'm looking forward to it.
People keep
asking me about the season. Like, rule change.
But I mean, like, talking about, like, Jeremiah Cobb, and I think about, like, what will it look like if you have a power run game again? Do defenses have the ability to stop that anymore?
They're generally not built for that anymore.
I honestly think that's more for speed and pass coverage. I think that's what this Auburn team can be.
Although I would say you do have more teams in the SEC that feel like they've turned to a power run game in the last couple of years, whether it's Lacey at Ole Miss or I wouldn't say that was a power run game.
I mean, I think they ran the ball though.
Yeah, at times they leaned on. I thought that Ole Miss.
I'm talking about when you use the quarterback. Sure. And it's like 2013 Auburn.
Yeah.
Like nobody does that anymore. In reality,
I'd say no. You're probably right. Like thinking about like even the top rushing threats in the conference, like they don't really.
Yeah, no, it was because they spread the field and did those things. Auburn's going to spread the field. But
like Jackson Dart had a good season running the ball. Yeah, but it was because a lot of that was off of the passing game.
Yeah. I just wonder, if you're able to go, like, we're going to get downhill and we're going to run the quarterback and he weighs 235 pounds, how much of that becomes what you are? It feels like there's going to be a lot of that, and I think it's going to be really interesting to watch.
Let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Again, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about, thoughts, questions, comments, as we continue with the Wednesday drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt Center at Building Supply.
Russell Building Supply is
90. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday drive, 20 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this nice-looking afternoon. Jason, you were saying it's going to be cooler tomorrow night, though. I mean, today was a warm day, but tomorrow night, 7 o'clock.
It was cool last night, but today,
it warmed up.
It was really interesting because it was so cool here yesterday at 1 o'clock that I went home and put jeans back on.
And for Jason to do that tells you.
I'm like, man, it's going to be cool because I know what Jacksonville is. Jacksonville is right in the foothills of the mountains, and it's there's a little bit more elevation. We get there, and it's 80-something degrees. And so it was opposite. But, yes, like tomorrow right now, it says 78 for the high and 52 for the low. So you're talking about a low of 52 tomorrow night. The game doesn't start
until
7.
Both tomorrow and Friday night, 7 o'clock games.
So you're talking about finishing at 10 o'clock or so. It's going to be a little cooler, which is great because we know what next week's going to be.
You're right.
When you flip the calendar to the SEC tournament.
Well, it's either rain
or 98 degrees.
Right. Or both. Yeah. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
We talked a little bit about the run game towards the end of that last segment. And, you know, I was saying during the commercial break, like, especially after watching the spring, I'm ready to make very few conclusions about this running back room beyond I do have this belief that Jeremiah Cobb could have a massive season. And, you know, you could debate, like, is the goal 15 to 20 carries, is the goal 20 plus, like what you know how you view Jeremiah and the most effective way to use him.
Yeah.
There's also Byron Brown who's going to run the ball quite a bit.
That's the part of that from an individual standpoint for Jeremiah Cobb that I think impacts it.
There are some games last year though where when you didn't have, I mean, Jackson Arnold ran the ball some, but you watch some of that, especially after Damari left the team, where it is puzzling, like the number of, I mean, for a guy who's still nearly at 1,000 yards.
I think it goes back
to Jarquez Hunter too. I mean, like, listen, the lack of 20 carry games.
I believe between Oklahoma, Georgia, and there's another SEC game in there, maybe A&M, maybe those three, and it's like a combined 23 or 24 carries for Jeremiah Cobb when he's the number one running back in all three of those games.
Well, I mean, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Georgia was 24 combined.
Yeah,
but it was only six in those road games.
Two of them, yeah.
I mean, 6 for 61 against Oklahoma.
Yeah.
That's still that game. The A&M game, you go, man, it was
– nothing was working.
It was – well, but you didn't try to run the ball.
Sure.
It was – and but the Oklahoma game for me will go down as the one of the biggest missed opportunities that I can remember. The A&M plan itself was just was mind-blowing to me. But the Oklahoma game, whether it was the wide-open throws you didn't hit or the ones you did hit and got dropped, like – that game felt like you should have won by two. Let's face it. Georgia was the same game. Mm-hmm. Georgia felt like you should have won that game by 17 points. You didn't win it. But you look, Jeremiah, he had 28 carries for 153 at Arkansas. And then in that loss to Kentucky where, you know, they kind of shifted gears, he had 20 carries for 72 yards. Still not a bad day. That's his only two games of the season where he carried the ball 20 or more times. Now, he had a 19-carry game against South Alabama, had 119 yards, had 19 against Missouri for 111. But he also had, you know, you look, had 10 carries against Alabama, had 16 against Vanderbilt for 115. Now, offensively, that's your best day of the year, so you're good. But 12 for 50 against Georgia. But 6-28 against Texas A&M, 6-61 against Oklahoma. There was a lot left on the table for him. But again, Byron Brown's going to take some of those. The tempo, to me, is going to lend getting more people involved. But when push comes to shove, somebody's your guy.
And I feel like he's been the guy.
He'll be the guy.
And he displayed a little bit of it. I mean, they were careful about how much you want to use him in A-Day when he's one of the known quantities on the team. But, like, I mean, you saw it in the burst when he bounced the one ball outside, like, in his, you know, in one of his carries in the A-Day game. It's like, this guy's as good as he looked at his best last year, I feel like he's taken a step forward.
Listen, that's also a guy that dealt with the finger injury all the way through camp early in the season. That we haven't seen his receiving part of things yet. He's a really good receiver. That's what we're talking about. Like Bryson Washington is too. He caught a punt. I think that's a part of the game in the passing game that could be really beneficial for this team is using those guys to catch the ball out of the backfield and adding another extension to what you would call the run game.
There's a couple of those kind of position battles on offense where you understand – even if you want to have a big rotation, like how big is a big rotation, right? Like at running back, how big
four.
Is
– I think three is probably
– I'd say four is a big rotation.
I think three is probably big. I think four would be almost impossible nowadays because of the way the game's played.
Especially when you feel like you've got a number one.
I mean, I think back to as deep as a room could be, and it was probably – 84, 85, Auburn. Mm-hmm. You had some injuries that impacted things, but you had Tim Jesse. Obviously, you had Bo and those guys, but you had Collis Campbell, mm-hmm. and you had, there were Kyle Collins.
And Tommy Agee.
And like Tommy
Agee.
Deep room in 03.
There you go. But we didn't see him, though. That's my point.
No, you didn't see number three.
That's my point. You only saw the first two.
You saw Brandon when Ronnie got hurt.
That's right. You only saw him when somebody got hurt.
And then you barely saw Trey.
And that's my point. Is like it's hard to. I mean, if you don't get him in that room involved, it's hard to get to those guys.
Unless you're using them as wingbacks or something like that.
And that's
the
point. You don't have those many guys on the field as you used to.
Right. That's where again I sort of get back to like beyond Jeremiah Cobb. I don't know. Right.
I think then it becomes a. If you had 12 carries,
it's situational maybe
for the
too.
Next guys. Because you think about it, if you average 18, if you get them to 18 carries a game, and then you're going, can you get 12 more from your other running backs? And then Byron Brown has 10 to 12. That's 40 something carries alone.
I think we saw more Davenport as spring went on, and he touched the ball more than any other running back in the A-Day game, and he touched the ball more than any other running back for South Florida last year. I think there's a reason he's here. Bryson Washington has been a number one, working his way back into shape, as Alex Golish said in the post-game press conference after A-Day, but he's been a number one. You said he's an excellent receiver, like a guy who's a genuine, you know, big-time threat when he's at 100%. And then there's Omar, who has worked his way back. I don't want to miss out on Tate Meadows, too, who's also mm-hmm. who's also here. And we didn't see Alvin, but I mean, there's
no, you've got depth and there's competition.
But Omar is one of those guys who it does feel like has made a lot of the right moves in the spring.
It feels like he's a little bit different guy too. I don't know even how to describe it, because you think about him, man, who does he compare to? I don't know that there's anybody he compares to.
Omar?
And from an Auburn standpoint.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, listen, you know, his body reminds me of Emmitt Smith. And his body is Michael Dyer. Now, Emmitt Smith was the guy that I compared him to a little bit, but he's more explosive than Michael Dyer was.
I was going
to
say, dare I say, like a carry-on-esque smoothness to his game with some of that? I mean, he doesn't have the weight.
Yeah, because it's completely different.
Doesn't have the burst, right?
Very different. To me, I thought carry-on was such a vision guy.
Yeah, for sure.
And so carry-on for me was closer to what Carnell was as a young guy.
Yes.
That's where they were both, to me, the two best short yardage running backs I've seen at Auburn in a long time because of the vision. And that's the thing. I think Jeremiah does a good job of that too.
Crazy.
Can you take the 3-yard gain? That's the ultimate thing for a running back, is can you take the 3-yard gain, not trying to get a 30-yard gain every time.
And then I always thought the other side of that Cadillac smoothness was, and it worked really well, but like the violent intensity of like a Kenny Irons style.
No, yeah, he was a Tasmanian devil.
Right. And I think and maybe Tank had some of that too, although I mean Tank would go try to hit the hole as hard as he absolutely could.
I think
but you're right. Omar's tough to offer comps for.
Because he has the vision stuff, but he's so powerful and it's low to the ground. If he adds the vision footwork thing, and I think he's got it. Last year was tough because you get in there and you're a freshman and you go, I just want to run as hard as I can.
And look, he's a guy that ought to just be finishing high school right now.
Yeah.
Right
now. Still crazy. I mean, I'm trying to remember the exact date because I looked it up. When he turns,
I mean, graduation's coming up soon, right?
For
Auburn, like what would have been Omar's high school graduation at Auburn?
He's finished his second spring.
August 9th, he'll be 19 years old.
Yeah,
wow.
And that's a guy that's already played a year.
It should be his high school graduation this month, and he's instead being talked about by Alex Golish as like the best pass pro running back on an SEC team.
But again, I think that's. Yeah, all right, so that comes back to Cadillac, because the guy Cadillac wasn't as big, but the moment he stepped on campus as a true freshman, that's where he separated himself. That's how he earned playing time, and Omar's done some of those same things.
Let's get to our final break of hour number one, final couple of minutes with Jason when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Mark your calendars for
NAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes with Jason Caldwell here as we wind things down in hour number one of the Wednesday Drive. JC, a busy weekend, not just baseball. It's Big Cat weekend.
It is. It'd be interesting to see, kind of what that looks like. And the first real one, when you start talking about trying to figure out for this staff what it's going to look like. And obviously I think it'll be a good crowd, but – Georgia's got a scavenger hunt. There's kids already taking official visits. There's more guys that will be back here in the next few weeks for take official visits. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't feel like it's going to be as big of a list.
Maybe not as star-studded.
But I think it'll be solid. I think it'll be a lot of in-state guys. So you look at it. But you think about two safeties to watch. I don't think commitment watch, but two guys. They've been on campus a bunch. But Jaden Aparicio Bailey is a kid at Prattville. And then Junior Tuopo is a big safety at Thompson. I think both those guys are there. But – Jeremiah Culpepper is a name that I'm kind of going to keep an eye on as a Troup County linebacker. He's been over probably 4 or 5 times in the past few months, came over to a couple of practices in the spring. I think that's a guy to watch. And then a couple of guys that are committed already that'll be back. But Nash Johnson's the other one. Was a corner, is committed to Alabama originally. Mm-hmm. Back on the market now. I think that's a guy to pay attention to. And then Rance Brown is an offensive tackle from Brentwood Academy. in Nashville. But he really likes Auburn, has built a strong relationship. He'll be back this weekend too. So some guys to watch there for a very busy Saturday.
Yeah,
the last day of the baseball regular season. You got track and field going on across the street. Big Cat.
And you guys are going to cover it all?
Got it all covered. And then, hey, women's tennis playing potentially a national championship this weekend. Women's golf won their regional today. Yep, yep. Men's golf starts on Monday, and Christian will be going to Athens for that.
And how they follow it all.
Check us out, auburnundercover.com, part of the 24/7 network. So come check us out.
All right, Jason, thanks a lot, man.
Thank y'all.
We're back with hour number two. Stick with us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Just in time. Welcome in for our welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Adam Cole from Montgomery Advertiser has slid in as we have this All-Star Wednesday with Jason Caldwell in hour number one, and then Adam here in the second hour. Adam, how you doing, man?
Doing all right. I was telling Butch this earlier today. We've hit the time of the year where I feel like Ricky Bobby after he won his first race. I don't know what to do with my hands right now. Like, it's just there's only so much going on, it feels like, and inevitably then you start to look at the calendar and all the emails you're getting about things that are, you know, all the golf events, right, that people are talking at. But no, it's that time of year where it's like all that's really going on, at least it feels like, is baseball, even though there's I think we went over it last week, and Butch went over it this morning too, of golf and tennis.
One thing he didn't mention, we were talking with Jason right there at the end of the first hour, is Big Cat. Big Cat weekends this week.
Yeah, Saturday that as well. Yeah.
I mean, so it's a pretty big weekend.
Yeah, no, there's going to be a lot going on for sure between Josh Donaldson and, it's going to be a busy weekend at least. So, got that.
Adam, you were there last night. You know, we were saying, like, you don't want to overreact to. To a tough midweek loss after the team had played so well of late in SEC play, but not the desired result last night facing Jacksonville State.
It to me looked a lot like the midweek the week prior, with the exception of a big inning. You know, that was like the one thing you were missing. I mean, the pitching wasn't absolute nails, but I think the pitching did enough to keep
terrible,
you in it, as it's always done. And, you know, I mean, that's a night where you throw, you know, Griffin Graves, Chancellor, Kulik, and Brewer, like guys who you're not necessarily seeing full-blown on the weekends. So, you know, it wasn't – I don't think the sky is falling. And not to mention, I mean, Jack State is – they're going to wind up having a pretty good spot in the tournament once that gets unveiled.
Win 42 for them last night.
Yeah. No, and I think they're 22-5 in conference play. Yeah. And no, like that's a good team. You know,
could very well be Auburn's two seed.
A lot of
the tournament projections for the NCAA's, because they tend to keep things as regional if
they try.
Can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they try.
I mean, I think Jacksonville State and Coastal Carolina probably make sense as two seeds for somebody in the SEC this year.
They'd be a two. I mean, I think they're a little better two seed than Jack State.
So they're 30 in the Baseball America projection that came up yesterday, which would put them right in the
– Yeah, that would. Then.
Like the 30th overall in the draw would
put you there with one of the top teams.
With one of the top – as the two seed in one of the top regionals. Coastal, I think, is closer to 20 – or 25, which would get them more likely to be a two seed for a middle of the pack team in regional play. But no, I think Auburn could very well see that team again.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be shocked. And that's, you know, hopefully maybe they're throwing a different starter. I think they saw the same guy both midweeks. But no, that Jacksonville State team is. I'll be curious to see where they land, because I was talking to somebody about this earlier today, but you only see so much of it in the basketball bracketology stuff of, you know, those, whether it is matchups you've seen during the season or you know, the regional sort of familiarity stuff. I know it's a whole different animal, so to speak, but I feel like what you see a lot with the baseball projections is a ton of those. And the seeding usually tends to line up pretty accurately, but, like, I feel like once you get down to it, there's – you know, there is that regionality, but there's not necessarily a lot of rematches. Like,
you see more teams sent cross country, mm-hmm. it seems like, in baseball than you do in other sports. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I agree. I think baseball does a better job of actually sticking or coming closer to matching teams based on, you know, where they rank as opposed to other sports.
How often was Auburn in Tallahassee, right? Like, wasn't that
too
like
often?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it became a tradition. And there is I mean, the thought of Florida State being ahead of Auburn and Auburn having to make that trip again is unlikely. But I think they're both right in that ballpark. Like, Florida State's knocking on the door of hosting in super regional play, and if Auburn were to slip out of the top eight, which, Adam, I'd like your thoughts on sort of the likelihood of that. I mean, I think you probably don't want to be going into Selection Monday on a 5-game losing streak. If you want to secure a top eight seed, but you'd think Auburn has done enough to put themselves in that position.
If they go into it with 5 consecutive losses, that's where my brow starts to furrow a little bit, and it's just one of those things right now where I think traditionally what you've seen of the top eight seeds, especially the ones from the SEC, it's like 17 conference wins is the magic number, and you're one short of that. So, you know, like, you want to get there and stamp out all doubt to me, but I also think if you go into, you know, the selection show and you're still at 16 wins, your RPI, your strength of schedule, the resume is just so, I don't know that there are many others really like it out there, and the other ones you're dealing with are what, you know, UCLA's RPI is really high, but their strength of schedule isn't. And I just think the resume at this point just speaks so glowingly for Auburn that I don't know what it would take to push them out of a top eight, out of a national seed, but I think the closest you could come is a 5-game losing streak.
Right, and if Auburn can host, I mean, then, yeah, postseason baseball again at Auburn. I mean, last year was amazing, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Tremendous atmosphere, and no reason for that not to be the case again.
What's your read on a couple injuries coming out of yesterday? I know the Bingaman took one off the foot.
Chase didn't play.
Yeah, Chase didn't play yesterday, and I think it was some sort of a bone bruise. I don't know if it was off of his foot or what. Like, that's sort of same thing that happened to Bingaman. But, you know, after availability today, you know, went out and watched a bit of practice, and they're both out there and moving. And, you know, Chase looked good. There was a, you know, you saw it a little bit, I think, with Bingy, but it was also like, I don't think he'd be out there if they thought it was that, you know, if they thought he couldn't go.
No. If there was any question and they thought another day off would help him, mm-hmm. he wouldn't have been out there today.
Right. So we'll see. You know, the way Butch has talked about it between this morning and last night, it's up in the air. But just based on, I guess, what I've seen with my own eyes, like, I don't have much doubt of them, you know, playing this weekend.
This Georgia team, I mean, just video game offensive numbers.
Mm-hmm. No, that's like, I don't think you'll, it's just funny to go from A&M to Mississippi State, and you're like, man, the Aggies could slug it, Bulldogs could slug it, and now
nothing
like this set of Bulldogs, yeah. Like, at all. So that's just going to be, I'm very curious. That's the matchup that I the strength on strength there of Georgia's lineup against Auburn's, really, like, it's starting pitchers, because For all the dominance you've had on the mound from your starters, I feel like the one thing that we have kind of seen is when it gets away from them, like, there's always a few long balls, you know?
Yep, that's true. Now, what they have been for the most part have been solo shots.
Right, and that's you got to keep the freebies at an absolute minimum. But, you know, if you can keep it down to that, like, you're going to be in a solid place. But I'll be curious to see what Auburn's lineup does against this pitching staff, because it's a lot of bullpen type of arms. Like, it's not necessarily that they're super fleshed out in terms of starting pitching, and it's a lot of breaking ball stuff too.
Well, that's what Jason was talking mm-hmm. about in the first hour, but he said that's what the guy last night at Jack State reminded him of too.
Yeah, so it's
so that's something that, you know, that didn't go so well.
Right. So, you know, can you chase a starter? I think that'll be really big for Auburn's lineup this weekend. Is, you know, make them the first team to get to the bullpen.
I mean, Auburn doesn't mind a right-hander that wants to come in and try to throw a ball by you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different when he's got breaking stuff, and it's been tough against power lefties.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not Georgia.
Right. Right. It's just I don't know that. I'm trying to think, maybe Florida. No, because Florida had Peterson and they had another starter who was pretty impressive. But I don't know that Auburn's seen a pitching staff like this in SEC play yet either. So you know, that it's going to be this is going to be the litmus test, you know, of just how good this Auburn team is. I think for the sake of your postseason, you want to walk out of this weekend with at least one win. But, you know, that doesn't mean you're not going for a series win or certainly a sweep. But if you're able to get to that point, like, you know, you're on a level you may not have even, you know, fully fathomed, so to speak.
Jason pointed it out in hour number one, too, that, like, for as good as Auburn's pitching has been in SEC play this year, you have the thought that you can add Griffin Graves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once midweeks are over after last night, like, you're probably looking at Griffin as a midweek starter in Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, like, he can be, whether it's an option out of the bullpen or a guy who could start depending on if things get moved around, like, the thought that you can add another starter or at least another option for a couple of innings that you feel pretty good about to a weekend staff where he really hasn't been leaned on all that much so far this year in conference play.
Yeah, and I think I was thinking about it on the drive over here. Like, this is the time of year where, like, you're never going to bank on it, but the thing that you would really love to have happen is, you know, whether it is a Griffin Graves or, you know, a Marcel Kulik or a Garrett Brewer, like, somebody on that staff or, you know, in your lineup, I think there's at least one, if not a couple examples of that in the lineup where you would love to see a guy just step into a role, take over and be this whole new piece that you haven't had all year. And even if it's not a role, just have a guy who comes in and gives you what you need. Like, I think of John Armstrong in 22,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I think he was a freshman then, but it wasn't necessarily like he had a set role, but it was just, you know, you needed a guy at a certain point, whether it was for 2/3 of an inning or 2 2/3 of an inning, and he'd come in and get you what you need. And I think Auburn has a ton of potential options out of the bullpen in that regard, whether it's the three guys I mentioned or, you know, that there's ample.
You're probably less likely to use Jackson out of the bullpen in some of these games in the postseason on the off chance that he might need. Like, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe he's.
Well, it depends. It depends on yeah. How soon you need him.
Yeah, because I mean, the thought that, like, Jackson and Griffin are potentially, like, yeah.
Jackson's the kind of guy that if your starter is struggling early on in the postseason, you know, to avoid you don't want to drop back into the loser's bracket or whatever. So you might pull the trigger a little bit quicker then.
Yeah, especially with, like, you know. Ryan Hetzler was the reliever that impressed me last year because he started out and kind of like it was like, okay, you've got your closer, and
right.
Then eventually you had moments where, yes,
yeah.
and it looked like he could be his own setup man, his own long reliever heading into that. And, you know, I don't think Jackson's, you know, the experience of watching him pitch is the same sort of thing, but I think it's similar in the sense of he talks all the time about preparing, you know, for every game like it's a start, and he gets out there and just eats up innings. Like, to me, it's like another starter coming out of the bullpen. And I think, you know, if you can lean on Griffin, that's the role I'd like to see him come into.
Yeah,
you know, especially after losing Drew Whalen earlier this year, if you can find another guy of that mold, I think that would take you to another level.
334-321-1390. That is the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Adam Cole here in the studio with us. We'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, we'll get to our first break of the second hour. So come on in here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Paid for by McGinnis for Alabama. 203 Investment Lane, Summerdale, Alabama, 36580.
Hillary! I'm really feeling.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser. Adam, while we got a minute or so, just talk a little bit about some of the things that you put out there lately and what you're working on.
Yeah, no, as far as out there lately, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's been a lot of boilerplate stuff of just, you know, there's been a lot of baseball obviously going on, but, you know, heading into this weekend, be on the lookout for a little something with, got a chance to connect with Josh Donaldson.
Yeah. You were telling me that the other day. That's really cool.
So yeah, we'll have a little something heading into that. And just as well too, you know, Montgomery Advertiser's planning to be at Big Cat on Saturday as well. So I'll admit that's a first time experience for me. I have not been to a Big Cat yet. So that'll be, I'm sure, a little bit of a trial by fire.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's obviously Adam Golish and his staff's first one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, don't really know what to expect. I would think that they want the guys to have fun.
Right, Right. And it just, big cap feels like something that, even though it's existed in the time I've been here, like the heyday of big cat, I guess, it feels a little before my time. I just don't know that
it was back in the early days of Gene Chizik, Gus Malzahn, yeah. Trooper and Looper and company.
Yeah, you can't invite Trooper or Looper this year because they're coaching in the conference for other teams. Trooper's on the staff at A&M. Looper is the running backs coach at Missouri. And by the way,
minus an outstanding running back.
Awful, awful news. Hardy. Yeah, about the Missouri Tigers star running back, a gunshot wound to the leg over the weekend, leaving a concert in Mississippi, and going to try to play this year.
My understanding from what I've seen, and like it's funny, you go to school somewhere for 4 years and then you leave and you only keep up so much. But from everything I've read out of Columbia, like it seems like a matter of when and not if.
He's back. Which, he's back in Columbia. He's out of the hospital. I believe he's back on campus, mm-hmm. and they're going to try to get him ready for whenever he can come back this season, but still like an awful,
yeah.
Like you hate to, Darren McFadden had, it wasn't a gunshot, but remember Bill, like Darren McFadden between seasons as a running back at Arkansas, I want to say it was like a fight and he got a foot injury out of it or something like, there was an incident or something like that. And it like suddenly just the last thing you want, if you have like a superstar all conference player.
I don't know how many times we've said it, and it's pretty much the case. If there's, you don't want news in the off season. Mm-hmm. Most of the times off season news is not good news.
Yeah, no. And I mean, I don't want to take an overly morbid turn, but it's just like you see that headline Monday morning and it's just,
yeah. Oh man, when I saw the headline, I thought you obviously. Immediately,
it's like the first thought that pops in my head is, you know, Brian Battee, and everything that happened a couple off seasons ago with him. And so, you know, once it was kind of like, okay, leg, you take a bit of a deeper breath, right. and to see now that it's in a place of when and not if, like I'm eager to see his return, especially. I mean, do you guys remember when Louisiana Monroe came here 2 years ago?
He
just ran all over the place.
He played great, and so did the backup. The two running backs.
First, yeah. I couldn't tell which one was supposed to be the stud.
There were two running backs on that team. They both ended up, you know, having a, you know, making an impact around college football. Darren McFadden dislocated his toe before the season in a skirmish back in 2006, and it was, yeah, I remember the sort of the stories about, like, the last thing you want.
That hurts
is,
to think about trying to walk with a dislocated toe.
Yeah,
there's nothing you can do. It's not just like when you break a toe or something.
Running back too. Well, yeah, you know, gunshot wound to the leg. I mean, it's it's Curtis Looper dealing with that, former Auburn running back, an architect of Big Cat Weekend. Mm-hmm. I guess you could bring Gus in if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. He could come be
he very well may.
Gus, or yeah, I hate to blow, you know, any spoilers here for Big Cat, but like I'd kick the tires on a Gus Malzahn cameo, even a Gene Chizik cameo appearance, since we know they're both here in town. They're both they'll both answer the phone when Alex Golish wants to reach out. So yeah, who knows what kind of big surprises could be in store for Big Cat Weekend. But yeah, a big opportunity for Golish and company. And they've seemed open to, it's not just about landing the 5-star freshman that could step in immediately and contribute. I mean, obviously they want to be in the business of landing those kind of players. But there appears to be a willingness to develop and look beyond just this season from this coaching staff. And I think it's clear on this roster of guys who look like they could be all over the offense, players that look like, yeah, maybe they could be a really big part of the 27 team. They're not slated for, well, we'll see how much playing time they get this year, but could be really big pieces of like spring 27 and beyond. And I would imagine the recruiting, like, yeah, they're going to look for instant impact guys, but it might not just only be instant impact guys being recruited by the staff.
Yeah, no, and I think about, like, can an instant impact guy be a guy who doesn't see the field in year one but maybe takes a really key role on your scout team and develops the whole year? And, you know, I think you think a lineman when you think of that vein, but, you know, even a skill guy. And I wish I had a better ear to more programs, coaching staffs around the country to get a better grasp of just kind of what the tune is for high school recruiting, just in recent years, I guess really since last summer and the House settlement passed, because it felt like the tone from, you know, the Hugh Freeze administration was, yeah, these high school recruiting classes aren't going to be as big as they have been. And I feel like it's been a similar tone struck by Golish. You know, I wonder what his full first class is going to look like in terms of total size, because I'm not going to be shocked if we reach a point where, you know, Power Four programs are signing. Maybe they are all blue chip guys and really high caliber, but like, you know, a dozen guys, a baker's dozen and change amount of guys who just are maybe really, really quality prospects that you've taken a ton of time on.
Well, I mean, I think just at least my feeling is that Alex Golish and his staff won't mind signing some guys if they feel like they will stick around. Mm-hmm. You know, guys like that you mentioned, offensive line, maybe offensive defensive linemen that might not play or might not play huge roles as true freshmen, but if they feel like they will stick around, then they don't mind spending that time. I think they want to have some players that have been through the system and then can help them. But you're taking a huge gamble when you spend a lot of money to bring in a big name prospect and he doesn't get to play that much, and you've worked all year to try to develop him, and then they're gone the next year.
Right. Just that dynamic of nobody is beholden to a multi-year minimum of staying at the school that they sign with out of high school. It's just I feel like I would be very frustrated if I was a college football coach right now with the thought of recruiting high schoolers.
We were talking about it a good bit yesterday, Adam. I mean, that's something that I'm sure coaches would love to see is at least a 2-year commitment.
Yeah,
I don't think it has to be more than that, but I think it's beneficial for a lot of young players to have to go through some tougher times. And look, going to college it's a shock. For a lot of kids, not just athletes, but you know, having to adjust from being the star in high school to just one of a bunch of players who were stars. Sometimes, I mean, it's too easy to just go, I don't like this, I'm just going to leave.
Well, if you have a climate too where coaches are less likely to sign players out of high school because it's like, well, I'm going to lose them after a year, and they're not going to like. I can understand why maybe it would be beneficial for. For like the players who we said it yesterday, the players who would lose out in a situation where if you implement a rule where it's like, all right, you sign out of high school with a D1 program, you're signing your exclusive rights for even the first 2 years. You know, maybe you're pushing your luck trying to make it three, but it's like guaranteeing.
I think three might be a little tough to do.
You're guaranteeing your first 2 years are going to be at that school if it's going to be at any D1 school. Like the guys who would lose out in that situation are players who were. Texas just signed a guard from Colorado who was a relatively under-the-radar basketball recruit who signed with a D1 program and had a phenomenal freshman year. Guys like that wouldn't be able to renegotiate.
I think credit then to Colorado for finding a guy like being able to sign him and let them at least get the benefit of 2 years of the guy before he leaves.
But this is the situation where like a guy like that maybe loses out if you implement. But if
that was the best option he had, that's what he had. I mean.
And like I wonder too about, because I feel like a lot of the stuff we're talking about, I don't know that it would happen until there's some sort of collective bargaining, right? But when it comes to that, you know, signing out of high school, whether it's a 2-year minimum or some other thing, for a kid like in that circumstance, you know, what's to say that there isn't a buyout involved, and what's to say that it's, you know, not on some super high number at the start.
Ooh, you can sort of do
there's
it.
Also
you
the draft.
Sort of like, yeah,
you, if it's just about money, there's also the pros.
Yeah,
right.
Well,
for an NBA prospect,
well,
like there
would be, but for football though, I mean, you could have it be a situation where like, okay, then you've got enough numbers where you can determine where you're in the whatever percentile. And yes, if you leave, then it would cost, and maybe the program that you're going to would pay.
We're doing arbitration after.
Yeah, well, why
after,
not?
After the first year, we're getting them in front. I mean, no, honestly, like
I mean, look, I mean, it's doable.
Yeah.
It's definitely.
I mean,
doable.
Well, there are systems in place you could imitate. yes. that have made it work. You
is
know,
that
through.
Is that going to be on the chopping block with the looming knockout?
I don't want to think about MLB okay. labor. I don't want to think of it. It's too sad to think about.
I think we might lose two seasons.
Right? Yeah. I'm scared. I'm scared about the.
I need to read up on it more because all I know is it's marching towards that, and all the headlines I've seen are like, yeah, they could lose the entire 2027 season.
All the owners want a cap, and the players are pretty steadfast against it. And it's like I don't know if anyone's going to budge, and this feels like feels like mom and dad are fighting, and I don't know if they're going to work it out this time.
No,
but it's but in the meantime, no, you're right. I'd love to see because we had someone earlier this week, and it's like I get why. You know, you hate seeing, all right, well, he's a fourth-year senior, and he's played for four schools, and he's going to go play for his fifth school. I get why people are maybe frustrated by that kind of movement. But to me, players who have stuck it out and have reached a third and fourth and fifth season as college athletes who are still in demand, I'm not bothered too much about players like that maybe going to the highest bidder. It's the frustrating, the frustrating idea of, all right, you just signed this freshman, and you're all excited about him. And the coaching staff, you know, went out of their way to find this guy out of high school and lure him in, and it's like, look, and Auburn has signed players like that from other schools, right? So I'm not gonna like it,
they
it's
have.
It's not it I'm not only angry about situations where Auburn has lost out in a player like that, but
Auburn hasn't signed as many high sure. profile players who sign with other schools as they've had players leave.
I'm trying to think of like the most high pro. I mean Kessler. Was a pretty high profile.
Kessler's
Walker.
A great example.
I was stuck on football.
Oh
that's,
sure,
that's
I was like Walker Kessler comes
to
mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jackson Arnold was a pretty big deal, and then left after. No, I mean, but you're right. Like Auburn is that like the Sebastian Williams Adams and Elijah Freeman examples of just the last couple of years where last couple of months, right? Where and even Cam's a rising third year guy, right? Like
I know.
Like Sebastian's really got to burn
right.
the coaching staff up.
To be a one and done,
yeah, and also
one and done, and now in the same conference,
well, and the thought that maybe like a week earlier they thought they had him locked up,
right.
and then things change a little bit, like, and we'll see, like that's another we talked about a little bit with Jason in the first hour, but like that's I don't think they're done as far as this basketball roster, like what's your sense of what could be next for Stephen Pearl and company?
Well. I know it's been more than a couple weeks.
Yeah,
you know, I know that much. Like really,
I believe this is 2 weeks.
Okay,
since Stephen, right? Didn't Stephen say it was going to be 2 weeks?
Yeah,
2 weeks ago.
But I just
Montas has turned 24 since then.
Okay, so that's well, you're 0-2, right?
That'd well, see, what I wondered. Well, I thought
well, that was going to happen. No
I
matter
wondered
what.
This allowed last hour. I wonder now that you're within 9 days. Next Friday. Is when the vote's going to come up for the 5 for 5 with the age stipulations in there. If you just wait and get absolute, here is the way it's going to be. If, you know, he is eligible, he is not eligible, and then you don't worry about, you know, I mean, because, look, he's not in school now, so if what good would it do to sign if he wasn't going to be eligible next week?
I think that'd be my best guess because it's like I think the only other basketball addition I've seen in recent days was I think Mizzou signed a transfer today or yesterday in basketball. But I mean that to me is the plausible explanation there or argument of just wait until the rules that are looming are set in place and go from there, you know, because who knows, you know, I don't know what you'd be working with beyond the portal.
How many international signings have you seen here recently? Not many, and I think a lot of them maybe because they're waiting to see, you know. All right, let's don't go out and jump and bring in a 21-year-old or you know.
In 10 days, Will Wade announces the entire LSU roster.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't be shocked
of foreign-born players. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked either. But yeah, you're right. No, it's been, and obviously, I mean, it's been multiple weeks since the portal closed, but it's just been it's felt very, very, very quiet.
You've also you have the combine going on this week too, which I think you should get, and we'll see how many, but it's like you should get some players dropping back to college basketball who may very well reopen their recruitment. You know, like it's a fairly commonplace thing to enter the draft and the portal and decide that you're, I mean, there's going to be a market because there are still schools that have spots and still coaches under pressure to field a roster. So I think anyone who projects as a like an SEC starter who is dropping out of the NBA draft and returning to college basketball, like I would imagine there's going to be a very healthy market for players like that if they materialize in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Because that's something you got. I know the draft deadline's late May, right? It's coming up May, early June to drop out of the draft and return. We had to deal with that the last couple of years with Janai and with Tahad. It's a little bit different that Auburn's not facing something like that this offseason.
Yeah, no. I need to take the time and go back and skim through the list of combine invites and whoever else of all the guys who declared but kept their eligibility. I think the only one I can think of that does not fit a need that Auburn has that I would also imagine is probably a very pretty penny to pay. Well, no, never mind. That's a moot point. Flory Badunga committed to Louisville, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, and he's still going through the – I know he was invited to the combine, but I don't know if he's going through the process.
I'm not sure.
Because didn't Lindenberg do that a little bit last year of like he was technically committed, but he went through some of the drafts? So, no, but I need to go back through and skim all that to just see what the sake of the options are because it's just I don't know. I'm in my head. I'm drawing blanks on where do you turn? Who do you look at? You know, there's not a name.
I'm sure there are other options internationally, but I just don't. I have no idea who they are.
And it's always one of those things where it's like I feel like you look at draft coverage is where I see it the most. But the thing I tend to have to remind myself about is, you know, these coaching staffs, scouts. When they're doing this sort of, you know, seeking out a player and evaluating personnel, it's like half of their job that we don't always see that, you know, you've got to dig to go find is the stuff that we do as journalists, you know? Like you can watch the film and look at the stats, but there's also calling the kid, calling his mom, calling his high school coach and, you know, figuring out how he ticks and so on and so forth. And I feel like through that, a lot of times you can find – you know, I know Elijah Freeman was getting courted by Tennessee at the same time he was getting courted by Auburn last year. Like, that was a very talented player, but you're still scouring the Division II ranks and looking for a guy. And so, you know, I wonder if Auburn's last ad will be somebody of that mold of an Elijah Freeman or maybe like a Chaney Johnson type, you know, of working out at a lower level kind of thing.
They've kept their eye on the junior college ranks, you know, pretty consistently going back to the addition of Chad, you know, a few years ago, and which felt kind of out of nowhere. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like – maybe they are done, right? Like maybe this is the roster, and I do think they could carve 40 minutes out of – couple different pieces if they need to. Feels like it's easier to do if you have another clear cut three ready to step in and either start or contribute off the bench.
Yeah.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join us. 334-321-1390 as we head into the final couple of segments here on the Wednesday Drive.
NAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Got about 15 minutes to go here on this edition. Bill, Dan, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser. All right, we talked a little basketball. I mean, there are, but we don't have a ton of time, but I think we should at least acknowledge the other sports that are competing right now. That are playing for big stakes, you know, women's golf winning their regional in Louisville and moving on, women's tennis playing for the national title over in Athens. That's always tough to have to go to Athens. Their tennis program has been just phenomenal.
Anna Davis winning the individual title at the women's golf regional in. It was Louisville. It was the Louisville Regional, Simpsonville, Kentucky, where Louisville was the host. Auburn won it by 6 strokes, and they are they've earned their spot in the 2026 NCAA championship.
Yeah, that's I just know like the last couple springs I kind of parachuted in with men's golf, and you just kind of look at the side by side, and it was like, you know, Auburn women's golf hadn't been bad by any stretch of the imagination, but obviously when you're comparing it to that other program, you know.
Right.
But no, that's super cool because I think the only thing I'd seen earlier was I saw they'd punched their ticket, but I just saw that it was a top five finish. I didn't realize they won the whole regional. I knew about Anna Davis, I mean, too, but that's awesome.
Yeah, they played okay day one, much better day two, and just blew out the field day three. So, yeah, so that was great.
And then men's golf.
Men's golf gets it started here, I guess, Monday.
They're headed to Athens next week, the postseason starting for men's golf as they eventually work their way to. Do they do it at the same place,
yep.
the championship, do. The Omni?
Mm-hmm.
That's where, yeah, the women are headed there for the women's golf championship. And women's tennis, too, also really exciting. You know, they've advanced all the way to the they're down to eight in the
farther than they've ever gone. There's no question. Jordan Szabo has done a fantastic job.
That's incredible because I know he did a bang up job. He came from A&M, but I mm-hmm. you know, I'd only looked into that so much, and so to see how quickly that has gone,
yeah.
is just phenomenal. It's, you know, you can't ask for anything more, you know. So, and it's down to, forgive me, but I mean, it's down to, they're playing in Athens. It's them. Is it them in Georgia, or is it down to?
No, I think it's four. I think
okay.
The final
there's
four.
Like a final four. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So there you go.
And we've got the SEC track and field.
Yeah.
Going on.
That happened in here.
This weekend.
Went and got coffee this morning, and there were about four or five different tables at the shop, and they were all track athletes from different schools.
One of the more interesting things years back, Dan, Paul Ellen and I did play by play for the SEC track and field championships decades ago.
I haven't done a lot of like play by play.
That was interesting.
Of like races.
I mean, it was pretty much like name who all's in the field, and by the time you've got every name, it's like bam,
Cameron.
It's over.
Now it's here comes Cole on the outside. Here comes, you know, you do it. I guess. I mean, I just watched. Like,
yeah.
I'd ask our buddy Don.
We
Dunn
didn't have time to mention many names. It didn't seem like. Oh, but it was fun. All right, we got a caller. Let's get to the drive hotline, 334-321-1390.
Pat is on the phone. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. A couple of things. You made a comment about Griffin Graves, about leaning on him and stuff. And I what I saw last night in the last outing, I mean, he was behind guys. He started out walking the guy on four pitches to start the game. He was behind on every batter they were talking about at some point right before they pulled him. I just don't think he's got it, like, to be leaning on him. I don't mind if we're winning by, you know, and eat up some innings, but he's not we have too many good guys like that are legitimate, like, ballers right now, that if we're leaning on him, I feel like we're in trouble. But it's still, I think he's got potential. I just think right now, after last night, I just don't see, you know, he just couldn't throw a strike. I mean, all the other pitchers are strike first. They're throwing strikes before, and then they're walking very few players. And then, I mean, to start out and just walk a guy with four pitches, I just think he's not ready yet. That's all I'm trying to say. The other comment about waiting, Bill, the problem I have with waiting is if you sign a contract or you sign to be with the school before they sign their agreement, you are grandfathered in. There's absolutely no question. There's no way you will not be grandfathered in.
I'm not sure if it's just signing. What I was told is you had to be in school.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I think if you're in school, but what I'm saying is if you're in and you're officially in before they sign that thing, that they're not going to go back and take away eligibility from people that were eligible before they signed their deal. That deal is going to be totally retroactive after the fact for anybody who signs after that date. If you wait until after that date, whatever they rule, you're stuck with that. Now, you might could win it in court, but I think there's no way they're going to go back and say, okay, somebody's 25 right now at Vanderbilt with 3 years to go. This is their last year.
No, I would agree. I would agree with that, Pat. I think that they're
right.
Like, I think that now, as far as keeping outsiders who are signing this summer, who maybe like exceed the age limit, like that, I think that's a different story than as far as guys who are currently enrolled and playing and tinkering with like their eligibility left. Like, I don't think they're going to tell a senior in college, hey, actually, you're over the age of 24. You're gone, right? Like someone who played last year. But I do wonder about, like, the Montas thing does give me a little bit of pause. Just like the thought that a guy who would be ineligible under the rules because he's 24.
Right. I'm reading the NCAA rule being discussed for 2026 will apply to athletes who are currently, it said, current student athletes who are enrolled at their university.
Okay.
So if he's not enrolled, if he's not in school, I don't think that he would get the exception. And that's why I'm thinking they may be, you know, waiting clarification. They don't want to sign him and then find out next, you know, Friday or June 1st that, sorry, he's not in because he wasn't in school.
Okay, well, and I think I understand what you're trying to say. If he can't get in school before they sign the thing, that's one thing. But if he can get in school, I would not just hope that they're not going to rule on it, because they're definitely – I would assume they're going to rule on the 5 for 5/24.
Oh, yeah, the vote comes up next Friday, as a matter of fact. Don't classes start next week?
I think the problem with getting him enrolled right now is that he's, like, fulfilling his professional obligations to the team that he's playing for. Like, they're in the season. Like, if you remember, Jovic didn't come over until pretty late in the summer last year because they had to finish the season with whatever team they're playing in. So I think that there's an extra hoop to jump through as far as getting him enrolled, getting Montas enrolled at Auburn before the 5 for 5 passes.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, well, if we weren't going to push to expedite him to get in, why the heck do we even do this? Because we should have went after the Aristo guy and gotten whoever the best guy we could get. I mean, it seems like we're just hoping and praying. Like, if we're not trying to get him in before this ruling, if we weren't able to get him in before the ruling, I would have went with plan B all day long. I mean, because that's you're just at the mercy of the NCAA, and you know they're going to rule 5 for 5 and 24. You know they're going to do it. They wouldn't be voting on it.
The 5 for 5 rule, even if it means Montas doesn't materialize for Auburn this year, like the thought of 5 for 5 passing and granting an extra year of eligibility to some of the best players on your football team and your men's basketball team, like, could be huge for Auburn in the short term. We were just talking about a couple of seniors that are fourth year seniors on the football team, but like, think about, like, you've got, I don't think Thomas Dowd redshirted, and he's a senior this year. I believe Kevin Overton. is a fourth year senior. Like that 5 for 5 rule could end up giving an extra year of eligibility to a couple of
my goodness, Adam Olson. I mean, think about some of the guys you brought in that you thought just had 1 year of eligibility.
Owen Freeman would be another one.
That's right.
Boogie, I mean, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know what Narcisse Nogoi's age is.
Yeah, I thought he had 2 years of eligibility. Okay. So it might end up being 3.
But yeah, no, it's I can't even imagine just what that's going to bring in.
It does close the door on the Chad Baker Mazzara reunion, most likely. True. That doesn't seem like that's going to happen this year, Pat.
Yeah, and the TJ Finley, he's out too. and Pavia.
Oh yeah.
All right. Okay, guys. Hey, War Eagle.
Yeah, good hearing from you, Pat. Yeah,
I joke, but a player like Chad is sort of what Auburn's looking for right now.
Yeah.
At the 3. But
yeah.
I think Chad actually is working out with like he's getting ready for. I think the thought of, and it's probably not going to happen in the draft, but the thought of maybe getting a summer league invite or people are talking about Keyshawn Hall as a draft prospect. You know, he's at the combine right now. Auburn put something out there, like the thought of Keyshawn Hall potentially playing his way into NBA draft consideration would be that'd be something for him. I mean, a guy who when his offensive game is on, Bill, like Keyshawn Hall, could certainly provide some firepower. Mm-hmm. There are some
his ability to you know, get to the free throw line.
Yeah, he's got, like, I feel like Dylan Cardwell is in the first place in terms of who they are as players is a very indirect comparison, but in the fact that Dylan has carved out a role on an NBA roster because he fills a very specific need and does a very specific thing, like, obviously that's defense, and, you know, I don't think I know, especially at the NBA level, basketball well enough, but if you need a guy like that on, you know, for the sake of his offense, like, I could totally see Keyshawn Hall, you know, settling into that sort of thing, especially with just the way his career went, to go from being an undersized, you know, 5-man all the way down to playing, you know, a forward, kind of, you know, taking it like a guard sort of role. Like,
I wonder if Keyshawn Hall, like maybe this does end with him on an NBA team, like with a role in the NBA, because there, I mean, especially if, I mean, at his size, if, you know, there are teams that play, spread it out and shoot it. And, you know, maybe, I mean, you know, there's a, I heard someone compare to like PJ Tucker, who just retired. And it's like PJ Tucker played forever as a, yeah, as a 3-4 who could 3-4 who could hit corner threes,
mm-hmm,
and do just enough, you know, sort of now. I just wonder if some of that's going to be like, maybe it's not the NBA. Maybe it's another league where he's a really, really effective.
I think he'll be a pro somewhere. I think so, you know, I don't know where that'd be. You know, I don't know if you're looking at Italy or Israel or Australia or, yeah, wherever, but like he'll have a pro career somewhere if it's not the NBA. Like I don't doubt that for a second.
We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. It has moved on quickly here today. Back to wrap things up and find out what's going on and how you can keep up with everything Adam is doing as well here in the final segment of the Wednesday Drive.
Hi, this is Tyler with Gutter Pro.
At Gutter Pro,
with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Best save those numbers in your phone's memory, and you can use them tomorrow, because we're just about out of time. Adam, always great to have you in here. Again, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you've got doing.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're just looking to go straight to the source, just head to MontgomeryAdvertiser.com and click on sports and hit Auburn when you see the drop-down, and you'll have everything you need. And if you're looking for me, whether that's on Twitter, TikTok, anywhere on social media, just search at Cole Reporter. That's my last name, C-O-L-E, and the word reporter, and you will be able to find me wherever you are looking for me.
All right, Adam, see you at the ballpark.
I'll see you there.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Auburn, Georgia, starting tomorrow. We'll talk about that and more tomorrow. Ferg going to be in?
Should be.
Good. Looking forward to talking with Justin Ferguson, whether he's in here or not. But hopefully we'll get that. And love to hear from you as well tomorrow. But we're out of time here for the Wednesday edition of The Drive. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.